Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Captain Lombardi Restaurants. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon, reach through restaurantguysradio.com, and now you can download our podcasts through iTunes.
Good morning there, Mark.
Good morning, Francis.
How are you?
I'm okay. You think the whole rest of the world knows how early this is for us?
Oh, my. We have, everyone should know, we've traded in our construction hard hats for our suits again. We used to wear both. We've been building Catherine Lombardi Restaurant for 7 months or so, and it is finally open, thank heaven. So if you're looking for good Italian-American food in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey, that's the place to go. And I actually, last night, I put the website up, just a little preliminary version. It no longer says coming soon, so you can go to CatherineLombardi.com, and actually in a day or two I'll have some pictures of the dining rooms up there.
Now
it's beautiful.
Here.
Beautiful Italian-American food. But I have Thanksgiving on my mind.
You do? How come?
Well, we've been getting a lot of email, and again, thank you everyone for emails. We love to hear from you. All over the world, been getting emails, a lot of emails from Europe lately. So, and they're all fascinated with this whole Thanksgiving thing that we're doing. Don't quite get it. But a uniquely American holiday and a uniquely American treat. Turkeys, I remember when I was younger, my dad would go turkey hunting.
Mm-hmm.
And wild turkeys are a whole different thing. Wild turkeys are smart.
Yeah, we used to go turkey hunting in the freezer section. That's really it for us.
Well, wild turkeys are a whole different animal, and we've a lot of the emails we've been getting, especially from abroad, from where turkey is not a common part of the diet, are asking us to clarify what all the different turkey hubbub mm-hmm. is about. Now, wild turkeys you don't see unless you hunt yourself. You're not going to get any wild turkeys. Wild turkeys are they're smart, fast birds.
Very fast birds.
And the smartest thing they are is not very tasty. Because if you want to survive, what you want to be is not very tasty. They're okay, but they're sort of a tough, gamey bird.
Mm-hmm.
The turkey that you see on your market shelf is a Franken turkey. 99% of American turkeys are.
Francis, what do you mean by Franken turkey?
It's been bred to be all breast meat. Imagine you, Mark, if you were all breast meat. And you were just a big breast with legs.
I would not be very attractive.
And you couldn't walk. These birds can't fly, and they cannot sexually reproduce.
That's really the grossest thing of all of this for me. It's not, they can't walk, they can't fly, and they can't reproduce.
It's like a plant.
We've created.
It's a turkey plant.
We've created a food that can't reproduce itself.
So when you look in the supermarket and your turkey is, 19 cents a pound, think about how that's produced, everybody.
Yeah.
How do you get something at 19 cents a pound? You torture the damn thing for its whole life, and you barely leave it alone. Anyway, so that's sorry to ruin anybody's Thanksgiving out there. But the other thing, being restaurant guys, that we're concerned about with a broad-breasted white is if you look on the TV Food Network, if you look at all the food shows and all that, you'll see a lot of tricks to make your turkey mm-hmm. taste good. Do you know mm-hmm. why you see all these tricks?
I know why.
Because broad-breasted whites don't taste like anything, and they dry out.
The breast meat from white turkey, it's pretty well flavorless.
White meat from a good turkey is very nice.
Right.
So is dark meat. But in the broad-breasted white, you have no dark meat, you have very little flavor, you have very little fat. And they've made these turkeys so big that it is impossible, or well nigh unto impossible, to cook those birds and have the inside be cooked before the outside mm-hmm. is all dried out.
And that's exactly what happens. And that's one of the reasons that you have to cook your stuffing before you stuff your bird.
A normal turkey is a bird mm-hmm. that lives on a farm that sexually reproduces. When we kill this bird, and eat it, it tastes good.
I just want to say, look at your turkey that you're purchasing, your butterball turkey or whatever brand you're buying. Take a look at it. Does it look like it's an animal that could stand up?
If any of you haven't gone to our website, I want you to envision, Mark, if you were all breast meat, a head and feet, okay?
I want you to stop now. Quit it.
Because I'm having
a little
fun.
My mom might be listening. Quit it.
But it's not. Mark's right. If you look at it, does it look like an animal that can walk?
It's
a caricature of itself. Now mm-hmm. listen, real turkeys are 12, 14, 15, 16, 17 pounds, and they have white meat and dark meat throughout. out, and when you put them in the oven, do you know how you cook a heritage bird? And it's a little too late to get one for Thanksgiving this year. But heritagefoodsusa.com, if you go there, mm-hmm. the deadline was last night, but maybe if you called them today, you might be able to get one. But for next year, you should plan on a heritage bird. What a heritage bird is, it's turkey the way most turkeys were, the bronze,
It's a turkey that
Jersey
reproduces,
buff.
that can actually fly.
And here's the trick about and my family, we have one every year. Because fortunately, I've been in the business enough years that I get Thanksgiving off now. And Mark and I spend Thanksgiving with our family. We come to the restaurant early and say hello to everybody and then go home and spend it with our family. The way you cook a heritage bird is you put salt and pepper in it. I like a little garlic. And then you put it in the oven and you turn the oven on. And that's it.
And it tastes good.
And it tastes really
good.
You don't have to rub it with butter.
And
you don't need to inject it with anything. You don't have to put anything under the skin. You don't have to fry it. The one thing that's really good for a lot of meats like this is brining.
Mm-hmm.
I like what to brine.
Yeah, it's too late. I realize that a lot of you are going to be having your regular butterball turkey. So why don't we give people some suggestions for things that they can do.
The one thing I did that really worked when I last made a broad-breasted white, which was several years ago, is if you're making that turkey at home, you can take a couple of ice packs, and frozen turkeys, you refrigerate, you thaw them out in the freezer, follow the directions, don't leave them on the counter.
No, don't thaw them out in the freezer. Won't work.
Thaw them out in the refrigerator.
It'll take a really, really long time.
And then pull the plug. Thaw them out in the refrigerator. Don't thaw them out. And if you can buy a fresh turkey, even forget about the whole heritage breeds. Mm-hmm. If you can buy a fresh turkey that has never been frozen will taste much better.
Company called D'Artagnan sells some organic turkeys too, which are actually pretty good.
And what you can do is if you take a couple of ice packs and you put the ice packs on the breasts before it goes into the oven, it chills that down lower.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one way to make things happen. Another way to make things happen that doesn't always wind up in the prettiest turkey, but it winds up with a fairly flavorful turkey, is if you start the turkey upside down,
mm-hmm.
so you start cooking mm-hmm. it with mm-hmm. the breast meat protected. And the other thing is, if you're using a very large turkey...
Just with these turkeys, what happens is you're overcooking one part of the turkey in order to make sure that you fully cook the other part of the turkey.
Right, and so you want to get the middle and the legs and all mm-hmm. that cooked. So if you start it the other way, you'll get them going. And then you turn it over and keep aluminum foil or something at the very least on those breasts until the last minute when you can brown something up. And the other thing I wanted to point out, you mentioned organic turkeys, and organic turkeys are about what goes into the turkey. Organic turkeys are about mm-hmm. No hormones, no synthetics, no pesticides in the feed, and that is a step up for sure. So the first step up is get a fresh turkey. The second step up is if you can get an organic turkey, mm-hmm. and then the best turkey of all would be if you can get a heritage breed turkey. And the way to find out about those, even for next year or for Christmas you can get one,
right.
is go to heritagefoodsusa.com.
And each of these we're not just talking about what the animals eat, but each of these three types of turkey for your table taste different.
Yeah, and you're turning the flavor up with each step up. Listen, after the news, after the break, we're going to talk with Anthony Giglio. Anthony Giglio is the wine columnist for Boston Magazine. He's a noted food author and restaurant critic, and he is the editor of the new Mr. Boston Guide, which is formerly the worst bar guide in the world, and now it's a really, really good guide, and we'll be talking with him after the break. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:15.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left Restaurant and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And today we have our guest, Anthony Giglio. Anthony is the restaurant critic for New Jersey Life magazine, the New York Sun, as well. He's the author of Cocktails in New York and the wine columnist for Boston magazine. He's also just become Mr. Boston. No, not really. He's edited the Mr. Boston Guide, which was, when I started bartending, the worst bartending guide I'd ever seen, and has now been edited to a really, really valuable and interesting book.
So, Anthony, you got to tell me, is Mr. Boston anything like Mr. Peanut?
not quite.
I'd love to see you in the suit, man.
Welcome to the show, man.
How are you guys?
Great.
So, Mr. Boston, when I started bartending in 1986, was behind every bar. And it was full of incorrect recipes that tasted terrible.
It's true.
So what have you done with Mr. Boston? I read it last night, so I know what you've done with Mr. Boston. But how'd this come about?
It was a gut rehab. It was the result of my book, Cocktails in New York, that came out a year ago, that got the eye of Mr. Boston. What happened was it was bought by Barton I'm sorry, Barton Brands, who owns the book, who owns the rights to the book, pulled it from Time Warner and sold it to Wiley Publishers in Hoboken.
Uh-huh.
And so Wiley came to me and said, we don't want to just, you know, republish another edition. We want to really make it better. What would you do? And I said,
and you said, rewrite it. Make stuff right.
I said, I go two words, gut rehab. and that's what we did. We completely ripped it apart. And I told them all the things. I said exactly what you said, Francis. I said, this book went from being in the hands of every single, you know, they sold over 12 million copies. I mean, it's crazy how many copies they've sold all these. You know,
Mr. Boston's has been behind every single bar that I've ever worked in my whole life.
Yep, absolutely.
Well, and how did it get so bad, Anthony? Let's start with the bad, and then we'll come up to the new. We'll build to a crescendo. I
think it has everything to do with, you know, the subsequent editors who got their hands on it after the original editor, Leo Cotton, who did it for the first, you know, 35 years.
Mm-hmm.
When he stopped editing in 1970, think about the 70s gastronomically.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's when all the powdered everything started to enter the book. Mixers. Power, you know, substitutions for everything easy and everything more difficult and natural to do was then simplified for our ease.
Well,
at the price, you know, at the expense of any of real quality.
The idea was to make it easier, like taking a powdered sour mix was easier than juicing a lemon and a lime.
But, absolutely.
But I love the old Mr. Boston.
It's just not that much easier.
In the old Mr., especially if you have a bar and equipment. I mean, if you're home, maybe reaching for the powder is easier. But, you know, you're a bartender. I love, you would read in the old Mr. Boston, you know, how do you make a whiskey sour? Put in whiskey, put in sour mix, shake it up.
Right.
I need a book for this?
Right, exactly.
So how do you make a whiskey sour in your Mr. Boston, Anthony?
Well, like you said, the sour mix is the clincher. And I think that most people are surprised to talk about simple syrup, because, you know, which is the foundation of many great cocktails.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And it's very simply equal parts sugar and water.
Right.
And you could do it like a chef and heat it on the stove. And as soon as it dissolves, you let it cool. You put it in the fridge, and it'll last forever.
Right.
Or you could just shake it in a jar. Audrey Saunders puts it in you know, an empty soda bottle.
Right.
And funnels in the sugar, adds the water. You shake it really hard. It's cloudy for a while, but it will clear up. But it doesn't matter, because in the drink it's not going to matter. But sugar water is used. I mean, you go to Gramercy Tavern, they put it out, they proffer it with iced tea, you know, in the summer.
Yeah, mm-hmm. we do the same thing. By the way, Audrey Saunders, the person who Anthony mentioned, who's a contributor that you acknowledged in the beginning of the new Mr. Boston official bartenders and party guide, owns the Pegu Club in Manhattan, and she's probably the preeminent. I think she's owns the preeminent cocktail joint in Manhattan, which
it's
is the Pegu
great
Club.
Place.
Well, it's the center of gravity right now for cocktails is the Pegu. I mean,
I'm glad you agree.
Milk and Honey is probably quaking in its. in its shoes.
Well, the Pegu Club actually has an address and a phone number.
Right, you can actually go to the Pegu Club, so that makes it easier.
Whereas Milk and Honey is this sort of secret bar with an unmarked door downtown with a camera where you give the secret knock and they let you in.
Right,
which is
like
kinda
that
cool.
That restaurant. But I'll tell you, speaking of Audrey, her and the book, and the Pegu is filled with books, cocktail books.
Right.
She was the only one who could find the original, and not even the original, like the first year, 1935, there were three printings. And she had the second printing from June. So, like, nobody has it. Nobody has the original one that at least they're willing to give up. I mean, I even, you know, put the word out with everybody I could get my hands on to try and get the original book, just to see how it was.
Did you go read the book at Audrey's place?
She sent it to me.
Oh,
I have it here on my desk. It's beautiful. We took color copies of it, and, you know, I begged them to try and reintroduce some of the beautiful, you know, the feel, you know, it was all hand illustrated, the first few pages, and then throughout there were these very, not scrolly, it wasn't very fancy, but there were beautiful motifs throughout that were like saffron ribbon that, you know, like was like, you know, dribbled down the sides of the pages and stuff. Really very pretty and probably very expensive to do. And she said they would never go for it. Wow. It would be too fancy and too distracting and blah, blah, blah. But they did give in on a lot of things I wanted, which was great.
Well, let's talk for a moment though about the beginning of the Mr. Boston Guide, because we talked about the sort of the nadir of the Mr. Boston Guide, which was in the 70s and 80s and 90s. But the Mr. Boston Guide came out in 1935, right after Prohibition, and it was really encyclopedic. It was the reputation, the laurels it was living on were well earned laurels. Would you say that's accurate?
Yes, absolutely. Cotton was a salesman, Leo Cotton, who was the founding writer, was a salesman in Boston for, back then, Mr. Boston Brands, which was then bought by Barton Brands. And he actually went to three And, you know, Lord knows they were covertly, employed during Prohibition. These three classic bartenders who had been around before Prohibition, of course, established names who were anonymous in the very beginning. They didn't put their names on it because, you know, again, this is post-Prohibition. People aren't talking about what they were doing during Prohibition. But he went to these three experts and said, let's make the definitive guide to cocktails. We have to codify it for, you know, think about, even though you say a generation is 20 years, like on paper we say that, but in my mind, I think a generation is every 4 years. Think about kids who didn't go to high school with you, you can't relate to them. That's a generation.
Right.
Think over 13 years, how many groups of people came up, you know, into the drinking ranks and weren't able to get a good drink.
Well, it was impossible to share information during Prohibition, so you had a big black hole of information there.
Right, and nobody was drinking dark spirits. They were very hard to get your hands on. I mean, we basically lost half the inventory, more than half the inventory. Gin was pretty much the only thing available unless you had really good connections. And a lot of it, you know, was really ethyl alcohol inspired. Plonk that could kill you.
Well, you know, actually, I view Mark and I as sort of the dark spirits of the restaurant radio world, and I don't know what that means exactly, but I wanted to make the joke. We'll be back with Anthony Giglio, the editor of the new Mr. Boston, an all-new official bartenders and party guide, and it's really good. We're going to talk about that in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:25.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, 1450 WCTC.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick. And we're here talking with Anthony Giglio, who is an accomplished food and wine and beverage writer. And he's the new editor of the Mr. Boston Guide, which has just been completely gutted and redone. And the Mr. Boston Guide you have behind your bar at home, those are terrible recipes.
Throw it away by the new
one.
That's what we're telling you.
Throw it away and go out, and you want to look for the new Mr. Boston, and there might be some old ones on the shelves. You want to look for the Mr. Boston Guide published by Wiley and Sons, and you want to look for the one that's edited by Anthony Giglio.
Because it'll make you say, hey, this drink really does taste the way it's supposed to, as opposed to, I'll throw that out.
You know, it's funny, Anthony, when I first started bartending, we would experiment behind the bar.
Right.
And, you know, this is when I was 21, 22, and I didn't have a lot of respect for cocktails, and I didn't understand them. My friend, our mutual friend, Dale DeGroff, taught me how to put a cocktail together and what it's all about. But I tried to learn. My first foray into cocktails was by opening the old Mr. Boston book and making...
Gook was the right word.
And making some cocktails, and I would make them, and they'd just be abominable.
Right.
Were they ever tested throughout that sort of bad period?
They claim that they were, and... I have no proof that they weren't, but apparently what they concocted was acceptable.
How did you collaborate with all the wonderful people you have in the beginning of this book? You have some of the best bartenders in the world that helped you put this book together. How did that happen? Did they each take a section, or how did it work?
Well, I'll tell you who was very. I mean, Audrey Saunders was one of the most critical helpers, which is crazy despite her workload while she was putting the Pego together. The Pego Club, but Robert Hess, who is from the West Coast, but he has a website called drinkboy.com.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah.
He works at Microsoft. I suspect that for him, this whole cocktail thing is just a hobby it seems like a rich man's sport for him because he works at Microsoft and probably did pretty well in stock there. And for him, this is just a lot of fun, and he is an authoritative man who knows everything. I mean, every question I sent to him, I had answers back usually within 10, 15 minutes, and they were encyclopedic and lengthy. I mean, he just would have an answer to everything.
Mm-hmm.
And he, like, vexing things like, how do I sort this mess of whiskeys? I mean, it would basically had to delete all the whiskey files we had, all the whiskey recipes we have, and start from scratch because, like, a Manhattan wasn't under bourbon nor rye. It was under blended whiskey.
One of the things that's very interesting about the book is it's really you learn a lot about the different spirits that go into cocktails, and how it's organized is pretty interesting. It's a very useful guide, and it's a very useful guide. You have a party planning guide, and it's pretty entertaining. And I want to talk more about cocktails and how the home cocktail maker, the home bartender, uses this book and makes cocktails at home when we come back from the news. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:30.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Francis Schott and Mark Pascal. Together, we own Stage Left Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey, along with Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Today, our guest is Anthony Giglio. Anthony is one of our favorite writers on food and beverage. He's the restaurant critic for New Jersey Life magazine and the New York Sun. He's the author of a fabulous book called Cocktails in New York, which you can pick up on newsstands. He's also the wine columnist for Boston Magazine, and he's the editor of the recently refurbished Mr. Boston official bartender and party guide. If you have an old Mr. Boston at home, it's probably a terrible book full of bad recipes, but it's been redone, and now the Mr. Boston guide is once again, thanks to Anthony's efforts, an invaluable and compact guide to have behind your own bar. Hey there, Anthony.
Hey, guys. How are you?
This guide is interesting in a number of reasons. You just don't, like, list a bunch of recipes and give people how to do them. You organize it by spirit, and in the beginning of each chapter, I think this is really fascinating, you explain all the rum cocktails. You have a little bit on rum. You have two pages explaining what rum is, what kind of rum to use, how to use it. This was a real departure. Did you have discussions about this with the publishers of the book?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I said to them, this is how I outlined everything. I had to compete for this. For this gig, I mean, they came to me and said, we're considering a few people. We'd like you to throw your hat in the ring. What would you do? And I sent them a really funny proposal because, you know, I just figured, you know, what could they say? Meaning that there is a format that all book proposals have to look like. Mm-hmm. And then I added to it, you know, a fake advertisement on the front, you know, with a dummy new cover and just said, you know, introducing the 70th anniversary edition with real recipes that really mean real recipes that are really new, written by bartenders that are really alive today. it was some kind of like five bullet points, and they called and said, you had everyone in the boardroom on the floor.
That's great.
And so, like, but I said to them, like, we need to breathe life into this thing and make it look so different. You know, and you've noticed the photography. Any issue from, I think, the 70s forward had the same Playboy photographer who took, you know, these porn shots of drinks draped across blue and red velvet. Like, they were like,
yeah,
they were really scary pictures.
Yeah. I've always preferred the naked drink.
Yeah, yeah.
Anthony, this now you wrote another cocktail book called Cocktails in New York. How are the two cocktail books different?
Well, very, very different. This one is encyclopedic in content. I mean, there are thousands of recipes versus Cocktails in New York is just 100 recipes for 100 great establishments in New York City that make drinks properly.
Mm-hmm.
This book has recipes categorized, you know, like I said, like Francis said, everything is by spirit in categories. Like, it's vastly different. This would be a quick guide. The cocktail book that I wrote, like, Cocktails in New York, is more of something pleasurable to look through and figure out what you might like here and there, but it's not. And it's categorized by themes, like, mm-hmm. you know, martinis, cosmos, dessert in a glass, like things like that, sweet drinks. This is more, you know, this is a completely useful book for everybody who wants to make a cocktail. They could find everything in here. You're only going to find 100 in my book.
Yeah. Well, for me, how I use the books differently. The Mr. Boston's is more for, you know, what's in that, you know, somebody's just ordered a drink at a bar and I want to know how to make it. Where the Cocktails in New York is, hey, I'm going to have a party and I want to have a theme, so I'll leaf through Cocktails in New York to find something for it to be the theme for that event.
I like that.
When Mark and I opened our own restaurant for the first time 13, almost 14 years ago, we said, no Mr. Boston behind the bar. Not going to happen. It had been in every bar we'd ever worked in. Mm-hmm. It was always terrible. And we're like, don't let it go back there because some bartender on a weird night might pick
we'll
it up.
We'll actually make one of those.
And try and make something out of that, and that would be a disaster. So I will tell you, Anthony, that because of your rewriting, this is going behind the bar at both Catherine Lombardi and Stage Left to be the reference guide if somebody asks for a drink drink that the bartender wasn't having.
That's great. That's great.
So, but I want the autographed copies from you.
I got to do it.
Now, for people at home, and one of the things I think that, you know, cocktails at home are really a lost art. I think because if you don't know and you're not in the business and you're not all set up, it's hard to make a good cocktail because there's so many people proffering so much schlock, from bad books to bad mixes, et cetera, mm-hmm. and so forth. So this is valuable for people at home. But we're coming up on the holidays. And, you know, you and I have been at cocktail parties in people's houses together. What speaks of the holidays to you? What do you suggest people do if they want to sort of jump into the cocktail or the mixed drink feeling of things? What do you suggest?
Well, this is where Dale DeGroff came in handy, very handy. When I, you know, he and I collaborated on his first book too, The Craft of the Cocktail, and so a lot of the stuff. You know, when I interviewed him back then, I have all those notes, and I called him and said I want to use some of this in Mr. Boston. He said please. And you know, I said, we need to, you know, to make it as easy as possible for people to feel confident about entertaining at home. And when you have, like, if you're talking specifically the holidays, Francis, it's got to be turnkey, easy
right.
to do, something
right.
you could assemble beforehand.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing like punches.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Be hot and cold.
Mm-hmm.
Punches, something that's pre-made for people. If it's not the kind of party where you don't have the butler or the bartender, who does, but if you have to have a self-serve bar, it's great to offer maybe one or two drinks that are prepared already that just need to be put over ice.
Now, I'm going to tell you that Francis and I, back in college, when we would have a big party, frequently would serve a punch.
Okay, Mark, the Country Time Lemonade blue whale in the wastebasket does not count
we
as a punch. You
forgot about the rainbow sherbet floating in the top. Come on. Is that what you're talking about, Anthony?
And I'm not exaggerating. That's called a blue whale with Country Time Lemonade, blue curacao, and some other god-awful spirit.
Aye, aye, aye.
But, of course, we would never recommend anyone do that today, listening. But for a real punch, what makes a punch a punch? And you have, in the Mr. Boston Guide, you have several punch recipes, and Dale has them in his book as well. What makes a great punch work?
Well, I mean, you know, the freshness of the ingredients, as always. So, like, instead of using all canned juices, to use fresh juice. I can't tell you that even a cheat, like, and I'll say this, that I even talked to Audrey Saunders about this, Dale DeGroff about this, like, all right, but we can't, you know, we could philosophize all we want about the, you know, the beneficence of fresh fruit, but, like, for most people's fridges, there's usually going to be some limes or lemons in there,
mm-hmm.
maybe some oranges, we hope, but that's about it. I don't expect people to go out and start squeezing kiwis for me, for these drinks, but you can't imagine what a squeeze of lemon will do to even the most boring fruit drink in a can.
It's a huge difference.
Do you know what I mean? Like if you're making a punch and you're adding a can of cranberry juice and some pasteurized orange juice in the container, which is perfectly fine, but again, mm-hmm. nothing like fresh squeeze.
Well, and you can also mix. I mean, you can if you throw a little fresh juice in there to liven it up.
Adding anything real to anything fake is going to make it better.
You know, one of the things about I find punch bowls were very passé for a long time, mm-hmm. and now they're so uncool, they're cool again, you know,
yeah.
especially if you do them right. But the thing about punch that really makes all the difference in the world is the ice. You mm-hmm. need a big block of ice in the center.
I was gonna say that. But you need a good block. You need ice. I can't emphasize it enough. And we tried to put it in there wherever we could. You cannot entertain at home ever without enough ice. It's the most mm-hmm. underlooked thing. And it's usually the most panicked about thing during a party, the running out of the ice.
But the other thing is, I mean, if you're going to do a punch, you cannot substitute seven trays of ice cubes for one
correct,
cube of ice in the center.
Or they'll just melt and water it to nothing.
And, you know, seeing that little iceberg float around and going over the punch bowl,
and you make,
super important.
You make fun of me for this all the time, but in my house, there were always a couple of the orange juice containers or milk containers in the freezer, and they were blocked, and we cut them open
they're
and made a block
water.
Of ice. They're full
yeah.
of ice.
Yeah, and that's really the way to do it. Listen, we're going to put a punch recipe from Anthony up on our site a little bit later on, and we're also going to talk about a very interesting drink for the holidays, which is a little easier to have at hand, will really amaze people, called the Tom and Jerry, named after Jerry Thomas, one of the first preeminent bartenders in America. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:45.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys.
Hey, you're back with the Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Schott, and we are speaking with Anthony Giglio, who is, among other things, Mr. Boston himself. He's the editor of the Mr. Boston Guide. Now, the Mr. Boston Guide, as we've said a number of times during the show, was for 30 years one of the worst books on cocktails out there, but it was behind every bar for some reason, and it made people think they were bad bartenders because they'd follow the recipes and come up with the goop that they were proffering. Now, the Mr. Boston Guide is a really excellent encyclopedic book that you should have, that everyone should have behind their home bar, and most bars should have behind the bar. Anthony, we were talking before about the holidays, we were talking about punches, and we're going to put up on our website, which is restaurantguysradio.com, a recipe or a couple of recipes for some holiday punches and how to deal with them. They're very festive. The other thing that I like, and punches are great when people come, and they're maintenance-free for the host. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have to keep making cocktails for people. But one of the ways I really like to sort of end a party or end a meal, especially on a cold night, is with my favorite drink, the Tom and Jerry. Will you tell us about the Tom and Jerry?
It's a controversial drink, actually.
I know.
We struggled with it with Mr. Boston because, I'm confessing something here, Barton was very freaked out about salmonella mm-hmm. and the use of eggs in any drinks.
Huh.
And so they were, you know, I actually have looked up. I did a lot of research on it and to see what other professionals thought. And everyone's, you know, most of course, as you would expect, most cocktail pros would say, look, you know, one in 7 million people get salmonella. Blah, blah, blah. You know, you have to, if, as long as you know that the eggs were carefully stored and blah blah blah, and you know, you take the risk.
Mm-hmm.
So the Tom and Jerry is named, of course, for Jerry Thomas, and it employs three eggs, whites and yolks separated, which, you know, falls under the heading, at one time they would be they might be classified under the Nogs,
right.
and it scares people. it simply scares people to use eggs in drinks raw because it looks like something that Rocky might drink,
right?
But it also salmonella has people freaked out. But I think that people who are going to be confident enough to make these kind of drinks are not going to worry about it.
And also, the alcohol and the acidity generally is a deterrent to the salmonella.
Hey, yeah. And listen, if you're really worried about salmonella in raw eggs, the salmonella, when it does exist, is not inside the egg. The salmonella is on the shell. So if you want to make a drink like this and you want and a recipe calls for raw eggs, the way to make yourself much more sure that you're going to be fine is you coddle the egg, which is you put it in boiling water for like 30 seconds and all the salmonella is gone. What you need to be careful about doing is not putting it back in the container that you took it out of when it was raw, mm-hmm. because that is like a little condominium for salmonella where it hangs out while the egg goes on vacation. But let's talk about the drink. If you're brave enough to use a raw egg, and if you're not, I have no respect for you. If you're brave enough to use a raw egg, the Tom and Jerry is an interesting drink because you basically make a batter.
Mm-hmm.
You make a kind of a sweet batter with sweet spices and rum, and you can keep it that batter in the fridge. And when people come over, you put a little batter in the bottom of a glass, and then you pour either hot water or hot milk over it, and it's an amazing hot drink.
Mm-hmm.
Now, hot drinks were more common in days of yore than they are today. Isn't that true?
Oh, totally. Absolutely true.
You know, Dale says, Dale DeGroff, who's another mutual friend of ours who's also an authority on cocktails, talks about how in America we had a fascination with ice. We've always had a mm-hmm. fascination with ice. Whereas in Europe, a lot of the cocktails are warm. Like punches are warm. You get a punch in a bar in Ireland or a hot buttered rum.
Well, you know, that's why our cocktails are better. because we like ice in them. But then there's the warm cocktails as well. And I think that's where the Europeans have had the edge on us for a long time.
How do you feel about warm drinks? You have a number of warm drinks in here.
I think they're great, but they're seasonal.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And now's the season, though.
Absolutely, yeah. Right now they're perfect. And don't forget, if this book, you know, if these are recipes, some of which go, you know, if that's for Jerry Thomas, let's say, we're looking at a recipe developed over 150 years ago when we didn't have central heat.
Right.
Warm drinks definitely served a much bigger purpose in society when we didn't have the heat that we have today.
Mm-hmm.
You know, right now we'd all be bundled up in our houses as well as outside.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, like, you know, you had these drinks that were warmed, and they literally served two purposes, you know, warming your spirits and warming your spirits.
Yeah. You talk about we talked about eggs and there's a real the eggs were used much more frequently in making cocktails. In fact, eggs are used in many old books as a frothing agent. Egg whites mm-hmm. used as a frothing agent in sours and shaken drinks. How do you feel about that?
I'm all for it. I have no problem with them. I mean, I just think that, like anybody who's an adventurous cook, or even, you know, who cooks, period,
right,
knows how to be careful.
Mm-hmm.
Knows, you know, should know, unless, you know, they'd be dead if they weren't. Knows how to cook and knows how to handle ingredients properly. I think if you handle any of the dairy products properly, you'll be fine. I mean, like, look at people who get freaked out when they hear about drinks. Like at Beacon, they used to make a Bloody Mary with beef stock, and people thought, isn't that going to make you ill?
Mm-hmm.
I thought, why? There's no beef blood.
It's beef stock, which is in your soup.
Right, exactly. But I mean, in that respect, I think that when you employ things that today aren't so common, it doesn't freak me out at all. In fact, I find the richness of those egg drinks mm-hmm. just magnificent, because I grew up on prefab eggnog, you know, in the 70s.
Right.
My mom would just throw some rum into and top it with a little nutmeg, and that was what we were told was an eggnog, which has nothing to do with the real thing.
Right. Now, you have a recipe for eggnog in here as well, right?
Yes.
Eggnog takes a little while to make. Real eggnog
is yummy.
It's nothing like what you get in the store. There's actually only one commercial eggnog that is actually very close to real eggnog, and I bet it is real eggnog. There's a dairy called Ronniebrook Farms mm-hmm. in upstate New York, and around this time of year they sell quarts of milk, and only quarts of milk, in glass bottles, returnable glass bottles, and they sell quarts of eggnog around this time of year. So if you see Ronniebrook Farms,
it's spectacular
eggnog out there. It's amazing.
But let's talk again just for one more second about eggs. Think of what eggs do to your food. Think about all the uses you have in cooking with eggs, and how they add richness and how they add texture and how they add flavor to so many things. They do exactly the same thing in cocktails. And just for any of the restaurant owners that are here, just a safety issue, you don't want to pre-separate your eggs when you keep them behind the bar. You need to keep your eggs in the shell behind the bar.
Yeah. Now, Anthony, what is it? What do the home bartenders need? I'm gonna buy this book, and I wanna, over the holidays, I'm gonna have people over a number of times, and I wanna experiment and make some cocktails and punches and nogs and things. What do I need to have in my house to have handy to be able to make drinks? You know, as far as bar equipment and ingredients like bitters and simple syrup and stuff like that.
I mean, yeah, you could you know, at the very basic needs, you have to have a cocktail glass, which is what today is known as the martini glass. But it's really called a cocktail glass. You need something like that with a triangular shape. You also need a rocks glass, which, you know, a squat wide glass.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't say you need the whole pantheon of drinks, you know, glasses. But if I were in a pinch, I could substitute a wine glass for a cocktail glass, although it's not nearly the same feeling when you when you drink it. But I would say that if you needed three glasses on hand for all cocktails, you need a cocktail glass. You need a Collins glass, which is the tall, thin glass, and a fat, squat rocks glass. And you could pretty much make every drink in this book in those three glasses if you had to.
And I tell you, I recommend going out to buy the book. It's the Mr. Boston All New Official Bartenders and Party Guys. Our guest today has been Anthony Giglio. He's the editor of this new book, and it has gone from being kind of a dog of a book to a really great one. So go out and buy the new Mr. Boston Guide.
Anthony, we're going to have to bring you back to talk more about your reviews. We didn't stop talking about cocktails.
Not a bad thing.
Hey, thanks for joining us, Anthony.
Thanks, guys. I'll come back, please.
Terrific. Take care. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 11:55.
You're back with The Restaurant Guys, Mark Pascal and Francis Shaw. Today's guest, Anthony Giglio, is the new editor of the new Mr. Boston's Guide, and, of course, a lot of other things, including Restaurant Reviewer and some other fun things. But the Mr. Boston's Guide has just come out, just been redone.
What a turnaround.
Just go find a new one. Do me a favor, when you pick it up, make sure you're not grabbing one of the old ones. Take a look inside the cover.
You want to look inside and make sure this is the one that's edited by Anthony Giglio. It's the 70th anniversary edition of the Mr. Boston Guide. For 40 years it was great. For 29 years it was terrible. And now it's really good again. And it's a perfect size to keep behind the bar. You know,
just slip it into the bar drawer. Anyway, one of the things that as long as we're talking about cocktails and ways to make your drinks better at home, a lot of drinks are shaken. Okay?
That means shake them.
One of the things that and again, we talk about our friend Dale DeGroff back in the late 80s when we were talking about...
Who's a preeminent bartender in America.
Making great cocktails. One of the things that he taught us is a shaken cocktail is really, really shaken.
I mean, shake it as hard as you can.
As hard as you can for at least 10 seconds.
Yeah.
And so a shaken cocktail should have bubbles come to it.
And, you know, in a lot of these sour mixes, people add in the traditional sour mix, the way you'd make a sour because you get that mm-hmm. froth is to put an egg white in there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I find that you don't need to do that. If you shake it well, you'll wind up with froth on the top of your drink. And I'll tell you, you have an advantage at home. Most of the ice in most of the bars in
That's
America
right.
is terrible. Those half moons, those hollow ice cubes, those little ice cubes come out of machines that are designed to yep. be able to make ice quickly.
To make 1,000 pounds of ice in 12 hours.
But
you don't have to do that at home.
But the ice isn't very cold. It melts very quickly, and because of the way the shapes are made, it mm-hmm. displaces. It's also designed so that the bars don't have to spend as much on liquor because it displaces a lot of room in the glass. Your cubes at home mm-hmm. make a much better drink. They cool better, and they melt much more slowly.
Now, again, we're not talking about your ice makers at home, because your ice makers at home have some of the same problems that that ice makers have in restaurants. What we're talking about is filling up those ice cube trays, making as large a cube as you can possibly fit, and you'll make better drinks by using.
All standard cocktail recipes are based on, and believe me, this makes a difference. It sounds silly, but it makes a difference in your cocktail. They're based on cubes, actual cubes that aren't hollow, that are an inch by an inch by an inch. And in our new Catherine Lombardi restaurant, where we have a classic cocktail program, mm-hmm. Mark and I spent several thousand dollars to buy a special ice machine just for the bar. And it's because it really affects the flavor of the drink. Another thing we talked about earlier that we're going to put a recipe up on our website for is simple syrup. Simple syrup is simply sugar and water. When you dissolve sugar in water, it stays suspended. It stays in solution. And it's basically like salt and pepper to mm-hmm. a chef. The simple syrup...
Absolutely.
Especially when you use fresh juices that are different as the year goes by.
The seasons are different. Oranges are going to be different in June than they are in December than they are in March. They're going to be different. They're going to have different sweetness. So, you need to deal with that.
So you taste the cocktail, and what I always do is I smell the cocktail in the glass, even when I'm making things mm-hmm. professionally, before I put the ice in. And if it needs a little sweetening, you throw in a little bit of simple syrup. Or if the oranges are very sweet or the whatever is very sweet,
you've got to cut back on the simple syrup.
But at the Pegu Club, which is also a link to on our site, which is owned by our friend Audrey Saunders, which is the center of Gravity of Cocktails in New York, they have on the table simple syrup like salt and pepper so you can season your own cocktail. It's a little silly, but I like it anyway. Hey, I hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Schott.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. Central Jersey, 1450. The time is 12 noon.